The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Gary S. Katzman presiding before court number 23-00263. Kumar Industries versus the United States. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
David Craven, Craven Trade Law. I'm here on behalf of the plaintiff.
Kelly Geddes on behalf of the United States. And I'm joined by Jack Dunkelman on behalf of the Department of Commerce.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Please be seated.
Thank you.
So I know that Mr. Goal has discussed with you the schedule for this afternoon. The parties, I know, have responded to the questions for oral argument that the court has sent the parties. This is the letter of January 2nd. As explained in the letter, each of you has really the opportunity to respond to the answers that have been provided by opposing counsel to the letter of January 2nd. Each of you can make presentations of not more than 25 minutes. Dedicated to rebutting the answers filed by opposing counsel. You also, within those 25 minutes, can make a brief opening statement, but that's up to you. As is my custom, I will give the parties the opportunity to file a post-argument submission of not more than 1,250 words, which will be due on January 29th. Without further ado, Mr. Craven.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will simply go directly into my response to the very well-drafted response of the United States to questions.
Well-drafted, but you don't necessarily agree with them.
I will discuss where our points of disagreement are, I must compliment the United States on a very comprehensive response.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Craven.
I think one of our points of disagreement is probably in some ways a factual disagreement. On page one of the United States' response, it notes that Kumar had provided information in prior reviews suggesting companies A and B were still affiliated with Kumar. We understand this is the department's position. We even also understand that there was a subsequent court case which occurred after the submissions in this administrative review, which found that, but we believe that that was not a correct conclusion on the record. We don't think that Kumar's prior submissions necessarily showed affiliation.
So the prior court case, is that the case Judge Stansu?
Yes, Your Honor. I was not counsel for Kumar in that case, but that's the December 2023 court decision. Yes.
And is it your view that there are actual errors or findings in the court's opinion?
I think that there are factual errors in the Department of Commerce's administrative determination, which the court upheld. Mm-hmm. But the court has upheld them, so I can only simply say we don't agree with the decision. And at the time that we drafted the administrative, at the time my client submitted their administrative documentation, there had not been a final court decision. Mm-hmm. And so that was their position at the time that they didn't agree and had been challenging it in court. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think one of the key points of evidence is suggested by the United States in its response is that, I'm sorry, you do need to start my timer, I think, sir.
Oh. Thank you.
Is that they said that income appears to be evidence of affiliation. And while certainly there may be evidence of income, we don't think that income is necessarily evidence of affiliation. Many people receive income from entities with which they are not affiliated. Furthermore, in their response, they suggested that Kumar had to provide more information than a mere statement that Kumar was not affiliated with these companies. And in fact, Kumar did provide that in the form of letters from these companies where they stated they were not affiliated and they would not provide more information. So when they suggest that we had not provided anything beyond a mere statement, that's not technically true. We had provided what we believed was all we could obtain from companies A and B.
So you provided a submission which indicated that companies A and B indicated that they were not affiliated.
There was a letter from company A and B in response to a letter from Kumar asking for information saying, we are not affiliated with you, we do not produce your product, we're not going to give you any further information. Thank you very much. I wish we had had more. But that's what we were able to obtain from companies A and B. Kumar had, in the prior two reviews, submitted significantly more information about companies A and B, but that information had been deemed in those prior reviews to be insufficient, and Kumar did not submit that additional information in this review. I believe I was not counsel for Kumar in the administrative review, but it is my understanding that they believed that since the information had been insufficient previously, it would continue to be insufficient, and so they did not submit it. Furthermore, in their response to questions, they suggested that Kumar was provided multiple opportunities to provide information. We suggest that two is not necessarily multiple. Commerce provided a broad question in the initial questionnaire and only issued two supplemental questionnaires.
But two can be sufficient.
I agree, Your Honor. Two can be sufficient. We think in this case they weren't sufficient because we don't have detail as to what would be acceptable to the Commerce Department to show non-affiliation. In fact, on page 6 of their response to questions, the Department of Justice, the defendant, expressly referred to financial statements as reliable documentation, something we were simply unable to obtain from an unrelated third party. And Kumar did not have its own documentation of things such as financial statements for the companies A and B. The defendant also expressed concern at page 6 that Kumar did not provide a notification under 19 U.S.C. 1677 MC1, which is where you tell the Commerce Department that you have difficulty with answering a question and you say, this is the information that we cannot provide. And that is correct, but we don't think it applies here because here it is not a question of the nature of the information we could supply. It was the fact there was no information to supply. Also, in the response, they suggest that somehow taking Kumar's word that they're not affiliated would somehow imperil verification, but that's not the case. The Department of Commerce, if it had chosen, could certainly have conducted a verification here and verified Kumar's claim of non-affiliation. They didn't perform a verification. And essentially, that's where we stand here, and a lot of this is premised on the fact that this company was not affiliated with these two companies, could not compel them to provide information, and provided what information was in its possession that had not previously been rejected by the department. And I really don't have a lot more to say, Your Honor. I appreciate the opportunity to present, and I would address any questions you might have.
Yes, the counsel. The government notes that Kumar provided documentation supporting its assertion that the amount of U.S. duties, if reported, included anti-dumping and countervailing duties. Should Kumar have provided documentation or otherwise demonstrated that it had included anti-dumping and countervailing duties in the amount of U.S. duties it reported for its other transactions?
Yes, Your Honor, it should have, and it didn't, but that doesn't change the fact that the duties reported would necessarily have included anti-dumping duty deposits. And the department has a strict policy of not including anti-dumping duty deposits in the calculation. That being said, the rate here was calculated based on AFA, and therefore ultimately, unless we resolve the other issue, that's of no moment because the duty calculations don't enter into the AFA calculation.
Well, just to follow up on your response, as you know, the government's position is that for numerous transactions, the amount of the anti-dumping and countervailing duties that Kumar alleged is included in the amount of U.S. duties exceeds the total amount of U.S. duties it reported. Does that contradict Kumar's claim, your client's claim, that all its U.S. sales transactions include anti-dumping and countervailing duties in the reported U.S. duties?
The calculation of duties and dutiable amounts is complex. And the answer is that it certainly raises questions, and I would have hoped that a supplemental questionnaire would have asked Kumar to address that, but we didn't reach that point in the presentation, in the administrative review.
So let me also circle back. You suggest that a more detailed list of acceptable documents would have provided notice. Is this level of detail really what the notice requirement contemplates? Why would a more detailed list of documents that could support Kumar's claim of non-affiliation provide more sufficient notice than Commerce's request for any document that could support Kumar's claim of non-affiliation?
Well, I think this is a unique situation. Ordinarily, I would completely agree with Your Honor that a general request for documents is broad enough to cover everything and that the Commerce doesn't need to detail which documents would work. However, in this case, Kumar had in two prior reviews submitted documentation that it thought was sufficient but was unable to tell what Commerce would find acceptable and what Commerce would not find acceptable. And therefore, that's why Commerce in this review had a slightly different obligation, which was to tell Kumar what other kinds of documentation it could provide. Mm. But the general principle, I would agree with Your Honor that it was sufficient notice.
Now, further question, you argue that Commerce should have looked to the totality of the record and considered the absence of any good reason for Kumar to withhold information. Does it matter whether Kumar had a good reason to withhold the information?
Well, I think it goes to the question of the veracity of our statement that Kumar was not related, because if Kumar were related, as these companies did not produce subject merchandise, they would have had no impact on the calculation. Therefore, there was no good reason for Kumar to withhold the information if it were in Kumar's possession. So the fact that they didn't provide the information leads to the conclusion that the information did not exist.
You suggest that, and is this a couple of questions dealing with the affiliation, non-affiliation issue. You suggest that because companies A and B were not affiliated and did not produce the merchandise, Kumar would have provided documents to prove it if it had them. Doesn't this proffered logical conclusion dependent entirely on the assumption that Kumar was not affiliated with companies A and B? And isn't that a key issue in the case?
Yes, and that is, you're correct. It is a key issue, and it is premised on that conclusion, because if Kumar were affiliated with the companies, Kumar would have the documentation to show it was affiliated. So Kumar would have wanted to show that it was affiliated, since the impact of the affiliation would not have been significant on the margin calculation.
And then finally, and you've, I think you've touched on this in your prior comments, you suggest that Kumar's claims of non-affiliation in this review are consistent with its claims on non-affiliation in prior reviews. However, the government notes that Kumar provided information in prior reviews contradicting Kumar's assertions and suggesting companies A and B were still affiliated with Kumar. And I know you've touched on this, but I just want...
Well,
is it relevant that Kumar's claims in each review were consistent if Commerce found the prior claims to be false?
I believe Kumar believed that its claims were consistent because, as far as Kumar was concerned, there had been no changes in fact from the first review to the second review to the third review, and that, therefore, because the facts had not changed, its claims were consistent.
Okay. What is the status of the 2023 Kumar case?
The other, Judge Sansu. I do not know the status. I assume it has not been appealed. Again, I'm not their counsel in that case.
Right. Okay.
They've had a lot of different lawyers.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Craven. Is there anything more you'd like to say at this point?
No, Your Honor.
Right. And I will give you an opportunity and the government basically 1 minute after of further rebuttal after your presentation.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Geddes.
Good afternoon, Your Honor, and may it please the court. This is precisely the sort of case that is the reason that we need one party to bear the burden of proof and the reason that the adverse inference framework was created. Commerce doesn't have the necessary information unless the respondent provides it. So we're working with an incomplete record, and the inevitable result in that case is that Commerce is going to need to make an inference against the party that's withholding the information. And that's the reason that a lot of the arguments made by Kumar are ultimately somewhat circular. They are saying that letters from a non-affiliated company are more than mere statements of non-affiliation, but that argument assumes that they aren't affiliated. If they're assertions by an affiliate, then once again, they're just asking Commerce to rely on, rely on whatever they're saying, rather than actually supporting it with documents that are kept in the regular course of business that are more reliable. And in past reviews, Commerce didn't find that financial statements or tax returns are inherently unreliable documents, but they found on the facts of those cases that they weren't supporting the claim that Kumar was making. So there's no reason that Kumar could not have provided documentation in this case that Commerce would have found reliable. And Commerce reasonably left it open to Kumar to determine what documents would be most appropriate for that purpose, because Kumar is the party that has that information.
Is there a sense of that the government is asking a party to prove the negative?
If this case happened in a vacuum, I think that would be, it would be a much closer call. But this is a case where when Commerce asked about its affiliations with companies A and B, which it had learned about from past reviews, Kumar referred to the documentation provided in those past reviews and brought that into issue here. Commerce reasonably took into account the information and the context that it had gathered over the years to ask about these affiliations, and Kumar did not provide sufficient information. So Commerce had seen information in the past showing that Kumar was getting an income from these companies, showing that there were shared board members between the two companies. So it was perfectly reasonable for Commerce to ask Kumar, to put the burden on Kumar to show that it no longer had an affiliation with these companies, mm-hmm. And Kumar failed to do so. And it's also worth stating that Kumar could have provided a more detailed narrative response as to why it didn't have any information in its possession, but instead it basically made these assertions, provided very little documentation in support of them, and essentially asked Commerce to take its answers on faith. But of course, Commerce's job is to seek confirmation and to verify the truth of what the parties are stating.
If Kumar had provided further explanation, how might that have affected the course of this case?
Well, we can't know unless we knew what the explanation was. Kumar said that it couldn't get financial statements from the affiliated companies, but I don't believe there's any record evidence of the companies refusing to provide those statements. But if this all goes back to the issue that the relevant information is in Kumar's possession. So if Kumar, for some reason, has no documents that can clearly establish whether or not it's affiliated, the burden is reasonably on Kumar to explain why it can't prove a negative, for instance, to explain why in those past cases there was income on the tax records, there was overlap in the board members. But at the end of the day, the burden reasonably has to rest on Kumar because they're the only party with access to the information. Mm-hmm. And without that information, Commerce has no choice but to either take a respondent statement on faith without being able to verify, which of course would not allow Commerce to carry out its job of assuring that the appropriate anti-dumping duties are applied, or it can make an adverse inference, and that's what it reasonably chose to do here, and that's exactly why that statutory framework exists. And similarly, with the claim that companies A and B don't produce subject merchandise, and it's therefore irrelevant, again, that's circular. There's letters from companies A and B saying that they did not produce subject merchandise in the period of review, but there isn't reliable documentation to back those claims up. I don't want to belabor the point. It was perfectly appropriate where the party that had the information did not want to produce it, particularly where there was reason for Commerce to believe or to question the claims that were being made. The decision to make an adverse inference was fully supported by the record.
I'll ask you the same question that I asked your brother counsel. Kumar suggests that a more detailed list of documents would have provided adequate notice. What level of detail is necessary to meet the requirements for notice? Did Commerce's request for supporting documents fulfill this notice requirement?
Yes, Commerce made it very clear what information it was looking for. And that it was not going to accept an assertion that was not backed up by documentation. Commerce wasn't in a position to specify exactly what types of records might be sufficient because Kumar was the one who had access to those records. But especially with that second supplemental questionnaire, Commerce directly informed Kumar that what it had provided so far was not sufficient and that needed something more than an assertion. But Kumar continued to ask Commerce to essentially rely on those assertions. So, if Kumar had produced documents kept in the ordinary course of business, made a more robust production, perhaps it would be a much closer call whether Commerce had an obligation to respond and clarify why it needed more documentation or why it didn't consider that adequate. But here we have a straightforward case of Commerce saying, mere statements that you are not affiliated are not enough, and Kumar failing to further support that claim.
Kumar suggests that Commerce should have looked to the totality of the record and considered the absence of any good reason for Kumar to withhold information. Does the totality of the record suggest a different conclusion?
No, Your Honor, that's exactly what Commerce did. It looked at the totality of the record and the lack of supporting information. It was actually a separate question in the first supplemental questionnaire where Commerce did ask for financial statements, but that was separate from the question where it asked Kumar to show with documents whether or not it was affiliated. So Commerce was not telling Kumar that it was all about whether or not it provided financial statements. It was an open-ended question, and the main thing that Commerce relied on was not any one thing. It was a general absence of any real support for Kumar's claim.
And then on the question of the calculation of anti-dumping and countervailing duties, should Commerce have asked Kumar more questions to determine whether Kumar had included anti-dumping and countervailing duties in the amount of U.S. duties it reported for the remainder of its transactions?
No, Your Honor, it's well settled, and experienced respondents like this are well aware that anything that it's their burden to complete the record and to establish any kind of offset or relevant thing in this case. Commerce used the record to determine where duties had actually been included, and as Your Honor pointed out, there was an issue where sometimes the duties that they wanted to deduct were more than the total duties paid. So yes, given that it was Kumar's responsibility to create the record, Commerce didn't have any obligation beyond what it did here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Craven?
I have no rebuttal, Your Honor.
No rebuttal?
No rebuttal.
Ms. Geddes? Mr. Dunkelman?
No rebuttal.
No, okay. I'd like to thank counsel for your presentations. And as indicated at the outset, you have the opportunity to present a post-argument submission of not more than 1,250 words, and it will be due on a week from today, January 29th. So safe travels. Good to see you all here in the courthouse, in the courtroom, and then until we meet again. Thank you.
All rise. Court stands adjourned.